Cheviot Market Uncut podcast, your weekly insight into the topics and trends that we've been exploring for you here at Quilter Cheviot. Remember, so you don't miss future episodes, be sure to hit the follow button on whatever streaming service or platform you're listening to us on, or by following us at #weeklycomment on LinkedIn. I'm your host, Andrew Jones. I'm an investment manager based out of the London office. And this week, I'm pleased to be joined by the long-suffering Richard Carter, our head of fixed interest research, and Sheena Berry, who is responsible for pharmaceutical and healthcare research. Richard, we'll start with you as usual. Now, there are two things I want to get into. One is simple and one is pretty broad reaching. The simple one, bit of a surprise on Friday, Rachel Reeve got some good news. Public sector borrowing in January, 30 billion, whereas we had an expectation that it would be, or sort of surplus, when we had an expectation of 9 billion. That's really good news. Does that mean that she's out of the woods?
If only. I think it is certainly good news. And actually, some of the recent economic news for the UK hasn't been too bad at all, excepting maybe the unemployment rate, which has been ticking up. But I mean, the borrowing is looking better than projections were a few months ago. But we shouldn't forget there was quite a big, there's always a big tax take, obviously, in January anyway, with all the kind of, self-assessment and all the rest of it. There was a big increase in capital gains tax, though, because people were selling things because they were worried about what might happen in the budget and all the rest of it. And I'm not sure we can see that as a... I think in equity analyst parlance, that would be viewed very much as a one-off. So I don't think we can extrapolate that one too far. We should welcome the news, I think.
Is that the kind of data point that gets revised away? Because when we get the sort of the monthly or quarterly growth figures, a good figure is often revised downwards and a very bad figure often revised upwards. Do you think this will get revised or do you think this is just a one-hit wonder?
You don't tend to see so much revisions with these sorts of numbers. They may be adjusted or whatever, but not massively. I think the issue is, are we going to see big surpluses every month for the rest of the year or whatever? And the answer is no, I'm afraid. I mean, they really still need to get government spending under control, and there was no great sign in the numbers that they've made a great hit on that. So, I mean, the OBR forecasts for borrowing, they do change a lot. It's strange how we have all these sort of fiscal rules based off 3 to 5 year forecasts, and actually they can't even get it right for 3 months out. But that's where we are. But no, I don't think there'll be massive adjustments to them. But it's just that we can't expect surpluses every month, unfortunately.
And I can't start planning for some decent tax cuts in the spring statement then.
not just yet. And I think if there is any headroom, it will get spent on military spending anyway, straight away, I would imagine.
Yes, I suspect you're right. We've been enjoying the President of the United States' contribution to our mental health over the last year and a half or so. I don't forget how long it's been since he was re-elected, but it's been a hell of a ride, as they say. And it's only got more complex. Now, I realise all the indications were that the Supreme Court was going to strike down these tariffs to some degree. I think that was what was expected. Yet, even though it was expected, it seems to have come as a hell of a surprise. And sometimes I guess that makes because of the enormity of unpicking this huge disaster. I mean, how much of a disaster is it for the esteemed Mr. Trump and his program? He's because he loves a tariff, obviously, and thinks that they're the solution to all his problems. If that's been taken away from him, I'm going to hand over to you in a second. But the expression "one's mind boggles" is massively overused. But on this occasion, I mean, where do we even start?
Yeah, places that I guess is that it came out of the blue on a sort of Friday afternoon. You weren't expecting that. I mean, we didn't quite know when the ruling was going to be. It could have been any time up to, I think, June or July. So maybe it's come a little bit earlier than expected. The ruling itself, the noise had been around it that the government was expecting to lose. So they had a kind of plan B and C lined up already, and that's obviously been announced already with this new sort of 15% global tariff. So it's a mess because they've spent the last year, you know, kind of negotiating with other countries on the back of these tariffs, which turn out to be illegal. You know, companies have paid a fortune, you know, actually about $150 billion, or, you know, if reports are correct, in these tariffs, which they should never have had to pay. So the thing's a mess. There's going to be various court cases, which lawyers will be very happy about for the next four or five years. I mean, where does it lead Trump? I mean, it's a bit embarrassing. It's a bit of a blow to prestige and all the rest of it, but they do have other ways of doing the same thing. In some ways, it's good that there's still some checks on his powers, because Republicans in Congress seem to kind of just sort of let him do whatever he wants to do. But they'll bring in this these new tariffs under Section 122. That will need reapproval by Congress sort of after 150 days, which isn't a given. And I dare say there'll be various foreign countries who will be, you know, kicking themselves that they agreed to the trade deals they did agree to, and that could all unravel a little bit. But I think the tariff man is here to stay, I think, Andrew.
It seems to a degree that the relative winners and the relative losers of the trade negotiations since Independence Day have almost been flipped on their head, because the UK settlement now looks pretty unattractive compared to the Mexicans, who've been let off the hook hugely. And those are only two examples I can pull out of thin air. It just seems that I mean, why negotiate? Why expend all this? You know, why humiliate King Charles? He's got other things to worry about, God knows, than rolling out the red carpet for no apparent reason. It's a real disaster, I think.
It's a bit embarrassing. I think China's benefiting from this, but then there'll be various, you know, they'll be sitting down in Washington and looking through all the, you know, the powers that they can scrub together to put the tariffs back to where they were, really. And there'll be investigations into unfair practices. So where we are today might not be where we are in 6 months' time. How the UK gets a discount on this 15%, I don't know. But it makes life of a trade negotiator impossible.
I'll offer you a very rare guarantee, Richard. I can guarantee you that where we are today is not where we'll be in 6 months' time. I'll stake 50 quid on that with you, quite happily. I mean, this leeches over somewhat into Sheena's area, but I think it's probably too early to start looking at the sector impacts and so on all of this. I think we'll leave Trump where he is for a minute. Something else that's come up this morning, and this is over to you, Sheena, if you don't mind. I read that you're going to have to correct me on these pronunciations, but I see that Cagrissima fell short of Eli Lilly's Zepbound in trials. Now these obviously are weight loss drugs, and the two there, it's a two horse race, really, isn't it, between Novo Nordisk, who were tremendously successful, it seems, in the early stages of the weight loss drug rollout, and Eli Lilly, which have very much taken up the reins. The share price performance is completely different. Is it all over for Novo Nordisk? Are they going to have to think of some other bright idea now?
Yes. Obesity, that's certainly been an area that's generated a lot of attention, as you say, over the last few years. And yes, it's been a space that has currently so far been dominated by, you know, Eli Lilly and Novo Nordisk. And it's really been with the drugs that are currently marketed at the moment, you know, so we've got Zepbound, Mounjaro, Ozempic, and Wegovy. But you know, as you implied, you know, Lilly and Novo have had quite different stories, especially if you look at their share prices over sort of 18 months. Yeah, Lilly is very much the one leading the way. You know, that was also noticeable when the companies announced sort of their 2026 guidance. So we've got Novo guiding to top line growth in the year of -5% to -13%, where you've got Eli Lilly sort of pointing to positive 25% growth for the year. Now, the active pharmaceutical ingredient in Eli Lilly's drugs is something called tirzepatide. That actually became sort of one of like the largest selling drugs globally in 2025. And, whilst there will be some price headwinds, in the space, they expect, it is expected that the volume uplift will offset this. But you also mentioned, what is also showing, with the differing fortunes is was Novo announcing the sort of an inferior readout of its compound CagriSema in a head-to-head trial with Lilly's tirzepatide. And, I think there was quite a few, the expectation was that it would be non-inferior. So that obviously has been a disappointment and hit Novo's share price as a result. But really, what is going on with Novo? I suppose you could say that one of the positive developments with Novo recently was earlier this year, when it launched its oral version of Wegovy. So really, the other drugs that I mentioned earlier, those drugs are sort of offered as weekly injectables. So this oral option helps offer a different mode of administration for individuals that, especially don't like injectables, and that will ultimately help open up, the obesity market to some new patients as well. The launch of Wegovy pill is going well so far. But what we are going to get is, and what is the next development within the oral offering, is the potential approval of Eli Lilly's oral drug in the US. We should hear about that in Q2, and we would get launched sort of pretty quickly afterwards. Now, Lilly's drug does come with no food or drink restrictions. That's unlike Novo's. So we obviously look forward to monitoring really how that oral market develops as well. It just, the dynamics of the obesity market, are pretty different to other therapeutic areas in that, it is quite consumer driven, with a number of individuals sort of really paying out of pocket for the drugs. So, yes, at the moment, between Eli Lilly and Novo Nordisk, Lilly is the one that's definitely sort of leading the way. But that being said, there are other drugs in development, and that they come from other companies as well. So the likes of Roche, Pfizer, Amgen, AstraZeneca, really just to name a few. So this obesity space is something that we'll certainly continue to hear about more going forward.
Okay, I mean, is there scope for Novo to really compete on price? Because just their compounds seem to be slightly less efficacious. That's the general conclusion of all of this. Is there a chance for them to say, well, okay, well, we guarantee you a 15% weight loss rather than 20, but it's only going to cost you half as much money. I mean, speaking as an impecunious middle-aged overweight man, then perhaps that's not an unattractive pitch.
Yeah, I mean, with these kind of things, you can always, sort of bring up price. But both Novo and Eli Lilly, for example, secured these most favored nation deals, along with a number of other pharmaceutical companies towards the end of last year. So, prices has certainly coming down, and as we get more, companies coming to the market, price will become more of topical. But yeah, the volume is expected to increase as a result. But also part of this is sort of, as I say, a consumer sort of more consumer driven kind of market, and you're finding that some people that are paying for it out of pocket are willing to pay for Eli Lilly's because their injectables have look more efficacious, so they are sort of offering better weight loss. But not only that, they also are proving to have less side effects. And I think, if you're going to potentially you might be willing to pay a bit more if you're not going to be hit with these horrible side effects potentially. So yeah, I mean, there's always you can always say that you could try and compete on price more. But at the moment, I think people are willing to pay for Lilly's if there was ever to be any sort of potential discrepancy there.
Yeah, so she'll compete on sharpness of needle as well. Thanks for that. That's really interesting. And as I say, I definitely have a dog in this particular fight because I'm waiting to pull the trigger, push the needle, I think, or whatever you do with needles, really, because I'm going to need a bit of help, I think. So the other thing I wanted to have a quick word with you about this morning. Now this is really a story perhaps from a couple of weeks ago. You'll remember when the market's attention changed very sharply from AI winners to AI losers. And the obvious AI losers were software companies, professional services companies, even a shipping, a freight forwarding agent of all sorts. But I also noticed that Medtronic was hit a little bit, and also Thermo Fisher, the sort of medical tools company. I was wondering if you could tell me that they certainly Thermo Fisher seemed to be hit quite hard during that period. In what way do you see those as AI losers?
Yeah, I mean, there's certainly been a lot of questions on the AI losers and where which areas are going to be hit. And I think when it comes to healthcare, it's still fairly early days really to assess sort of the impact. But I think at the moment it would say that the areas that we've seen so far that have been of concern, have been some of the life science tools names such as Thermo Fisher and sort of contract research organizations. So these are companies that sort of help companies in the sector manage sort of outsourced research activities, and things such as clinical trials. And I think that is really due to the idea that AI will disrupt sort of some elements of drug discovery and drug development. But I think it is worth bearing in mind, that healthcare is typically quite slow moving in terms of disruption. Obviously, it's a very highly regulated market, obviously, given that you are dealing with people's lives. But I think also it's one of these things looking at it from the other side. So, in terms of where the majority of AI spending is going at the moment, we'd say that it probably is, drug discovery and preclinical development. But what it could do is it could actually help bring in more drugs into sort of preclinical, and clinical development. And, it could also help in ways of, potentially accelerating drug development and helping lower costs of the whole, drug development life cycle. What else have we seen? We've also seen that some areas, potentially within medical technology, they've sort of maybe started to come in focus more as potentially, where could AI disrupt there, and places maybe such as imaging have been brought up. But, what is really important is to understand sort of how integrated the software offering is really within the whole core offering. So yeah, it's certainly something that we're going to keep hearing about. But I think, AI can really help, in terms of some efficiency gains within healthcare. But at the moment, yeah, the biggest AI concern, I suppose, in the sector probably is that contract research organization offering at the moment.
Right. Okay. That makes sense. I certainly see broadly these are always AI winners than losers, but I can see that contract business definitely being quite relevant. Okay. Thank you for that. I'm going to let you both go now. Richard, I just noticed that the European Union has announced that it's freezing its ratification talks, well, its trade deal with the USA. So that one's going to be rattling around all week, I suspect. Unless you've got anything else you want to say on that basis. I presume not. I will say thank you very much to everyone who's listening. In fact, to anyone who's listening, I hope you enjoyed our discussions today. We'd love to hear from our listeners. So please review the show wherever you're listening and share it on your socials. Tag us at Cool to Achieve It. To make sure you don't miss a future episode, hit the subscribe button. We'll be back next week. One of my other colleagues will be looking after you. In the meantime, head over to our website, www.quiltachieveit.com, where you can read the accompanying market overview, as well as subscribe to our weekly comment newsletter. You can stay up to date with our thoughts and market news and industry updates on our website or social media pages. Finally, if you do have any questions you'd like to ask for yourselves for the next podcast, please put them on the weekly comments page on the website. We'd love to hear your questions and address them in that environment. And that's it for today. So thank you, Richard. Thank you, Sheena, for your time today. And thank you for listening. See you all next time.
This podcast is marketing material, not investment advice or research material. Investments can go up as well as down, and past performance isn't a guide to the future.